Hello, and welcome to another lesson in the Lead Yourself First program. My name is Tom Cooper, and today we're talking about a tool that you can use that will multiply your effectiveness. It speeds up your learning and helps you deliver better results faster. Today's lesson is on the discipline of reflection. Lead Yourself First is your personal growth program. As John Maxwell says, contrary to what Julius Caesar said, experience is not the best teacher. Evaluated experience is the best teacher. Today, we're going to be talking about how to make sure you do evaluate your experiences. Lead Yourself First is your system to help you develop the leadership skills that are going to help you today and every day. And if you take the ideas that we share here and you put them into use, it's going to make a big difference in your outcomes. I remember looking over the course of my career, seeing people who were more successful than I was and trying to figure out what it was that made them able to achieve things I was unable to achieve. And it helped me to really seek to understand what I ought to do and how I could grow. And understanding that there was a need to invest in myself, a need to continually learn, is what drove me to the place where I am today. And I wish somebody had showed this concept to me earlier, this personal development, this growth that was something I could choose to do. And I'm excited to be able to share these ideas because they can make a big difference for you as well. Now, before we jump into this lesson, I always ask, how are you going to act when this lesson is over? What's something you can apply from today's lesson? What's something you might be able to change from today's lesson? And finally, what's something you can teach? What can you share with someone else? Our goal is to be a river, not a reservoir. How can you be able to share these ideas with others? Now, I've been looking forward to sharing today's lesson with you. I look forward to it because I know that this message, while it's countercultural, I mean, it's unusual. Some might even say shocking, but it's also a secret weapon that will increase your effectiveness. It's a simple way to help you get more out of each day. Now, in the next few minutes, we're going to talk about some incredible ideas when it comes to reflection and growth. And I want to encourage you to take action, because if you really change the way that you interact, the way that you behave, it will have a massive impact on the outcomes that you get. Even small steps can lead to big results. Now, some of you may want to go deeper and do more. You might want accountability about putting these ideas into practice. And at the end of today's lesson, I'm going to share with you a way to do that. Fair enough? All right, today we're talking about one of John Maxwell's 15 invaluable laws of growth, reflection. But what's wrong with the idea of reflection? Well, it's uncommon because we're busy. We're distracted. We are overwhelmed with activity. Now, I can remember many years ago in 1981 when MTV launched. Yes, I'm old. But it was revolutionary, this idea that we could take music expression to a whole new level by adding video story to songs, and that expression could be a mainstream thing. Now, you fast forward to 2006. Now, for most TV channels, a 25th anniversary is a big deal. It's a milestone showing they've been able to persevere and to adapt and to learn over time to stay relevant enough to still exist. And many people anticipated a big production or a big celebration of the day. But surprisingly, MTV Music Group Chief Van Toffler remarked, "We're not a reflective organization." USA Today commented, "Most of the channel's viewers weren't even alive when it was launched, and for them, a reminder of its age might be a turnoff." And I would argue that Toffler's comment is bigger than MTV. I think it's a description of the way our culture approaches looking back. Who's got time for that? We're busy. We're overscheduled. We're always behind. We're always needing to catch up, to focus more, to work harder. And culturally, we pride ourselves on being busy. How you doing? Oh, I'm busy. Busy's normal. Busy's what's expected. Overwhelmed is normal. We're living on fast forward. Who's got time to slow down? But let's pause for just one moment. And let me ask you this. How are you measuring success? Is success defined by how many tasks you get done? Is it about projects that you complete? Is it about your income alone? I like what finance and sales influencer Ramit Sethi says. He's all about creating a rich life that has little to do with money and more to do with the pursuit of things that are going to enrich his daily experiences. When I was a manager in a large organization, I would encourage my team members to consider their goals for growth and professional development. And I challenged them to come up with ideas, and I committed to help them achieve whatever goals they'd set. One significantly important component of our success is our ability to learn. And how do we learn? We learn by taking time to, as John Maxwell says, evaluate our experiences. And during my corporate career, when I was a team member, I remember believing that I was hired to solve hard problems. So I tended to think it was my job to work on solving hard problems. But I kept running into difficulty. Over and over again, I ran into the same kind of problem. Different bosses I worked for told me they felt I wasn't productive enough. I couldn't understand why they felt that way. I was busy, and I was solving hard problems, but it kept happening. And I wanted to be seen as a star performer, and yet I kept being called out as a mediocre performer. And what was really, really the most upsetting to me about that was I knew I worked harder than a lot of the people around me. I was committing to getting results. I was delivering results. But I have to tell you, it really stung when my boss said, "Tom, I don't get it, and my boss doesn't get it. Why do you waste so much time on work that is really unimportant?" I could not believe it. I was astonished. I was stunned to hear that news. Have you ever been in a situation where you've been misunderstood? Or you've been wrongly judged for what you thought or what you've done? It hurts, doesn't it? It's challenging and it's frustrating. And until I could figure out why it was happening, it was going to keep happening. And that's the reality. How in the world could I figure out why it was happening? This was going to require reflection. I fundamentally did not like being seen as a poor performer. And I had a big lesson to learn. And we'll come back to what I learned at the end of today's lesson. Management guru Peter Drucker said, "Follow effective action with quiet reflection. From the quiet reflection will come even more effective action." I think Drucker's exactly right. He says, we should follow effective action with quiet reflection. From the quiet reflection will come even more effective action. We need to make time to reflect in order to be effective. Because reflection is the essential requirement to being able to evaluate our experiences. John says reflection turns experience into insight. How in the world would I ever experience insights unless I reflected on the journey that had led me to the place where multiple bosses thought I was an average or low performer? But I was so busy doing important work, how could I possibly make the time to reflect? Part of my story was that being busy was the formula to success, or so I thought. Realistically, being busy and working hard, they weren't working out for me. I did want to grow, and I learned that growth required thinking about growing. Now, I was on my journey trying to figure this out, and it was from my reading and my attending conferences as part of my growth plan that I came across this quote from Teddy Roosevelt. He said, "If you could kick the person in the pants responsible for most of your trouble, you would not sit for a month." It wasn't until I began to reflect, to think carefully about what it was that was contributing to my situation. I mean, was it that I had stupid bosses? Was I lying to myself? Was I actually a low performer that was simply confused about what it meant to be a high performer? Years ago, when I started my business as a coach and a speaker, I paid for access to some of the best training on public speaking that I could find. I got acquainted with a master of public speaking, an incredible trainer, and a brilliant mentor named Roddy Galbraith. And one of the lessons that Roddy taught me was linked to something that Jim Rohn said. Jim Rohn said, at the end of each day, you should play back the tape of your performance. The results should either applaud you or prod you. Roddy taught me that if I would write out my speech and then practice my speech, I'd get better. Duh. But you know, the funny thing is, most speakers don't even do that. But Roddy went on to give me a specific tip on how to reflect on my speech that was overwhelmingly powerful. In fact, it's one I need to get back to implement again. Roddy taught me that I should record myself as I practice my speech. That after I practice my speech, I had to watch the recording, making notes of ways to improve. He also said that using those insights, I should re-record me practicing my speech and then watch it that time and then make notes again. This process, Roddy recommends, ought to be repeated 10 times. 10 times? Are you kidding me? But that process of repeated reflection forced me to become a better speaker. What is it in your life that you want to be better at? Where is an area where you need to improve? Things do not get better by accident. They just don't. It's a law of the universe that things go from more organized to less organized. That's the nature of things. I heard somebody say yesterday, nobody wakes up one day a millionaire and says, gee, how'd that happen? Our job is to really think about how we might want to get better. Whatever it is you want to get better at, you need to know you're not going to get better at it unless you're learning. Now, people often say practice makes perfect, but that's just not true. Perfect practice helps us get better, but who practices perfectly? We must reflect on how to improve so we can actually get better. It's practice combined with reflection that leads to progress. And how are we going to reflect? What can we do that will lead us to better performance? How can we learn how to reflect? Well, the answer comes in the form of questions. Questions are what we need to help us begin to reflect on our experiences. I want to share with you some sample questions that John gives to help with reflection. He asks questions like, what is my biggest asset? What's my greatest liability? What is my highest high in life? What has been my lowest low? What's my most worthwhile emotion? What's my least worthwhile emotion? This is a component of self-reflection that is important for you to be aware of yourself. That self-awareness is going to lead you to additional insights that you don't yet have. I like the questions that John offers about valuing people. He asks questions like, do I value people? Do people know I value them? How do I show that I value them? What evidence do I have to confirm my opinion? Now, these are questions worthy of spending some time thinking about. And I would encourage you to take these questions and spend some time with them. Do you have a time and a place to think? My guess is if you're like me, you're too busy to have that. But what if you did? And I don't mean a two-hour thinking session. I'm not sure that any of us could do that easily. But what if you could start small? What if you could spend 2 minutes at the end of each day to ask yourself a couple of questions like, what was my best moment today? Which moment, if I could, would I like to do over? And why is that? Moreover, what could I do tomorrow so that my reflection time tomorrow is better than my reflection time today? Now, this is weird. It's countercultural. It's unusual. And John says, if all this sounds like a lot of trouble, you're right. That's why most people will never do it. But if you really want to set yourself apart, you've got to do things differently. So how did I move from being a low performer to being a key contributor? What was it that I learned about my work that led to my problems? I started asking myself some unpleasant questions. Questions like, Why does my boss think I'm a low performer? Is it that my bosses are just foolish? That might be true if it happened one time, but it happened more than one time to me. What if Teddy Roosevelt was right? What if it was true that the person responsible for most of my troubles was me? What part had I played in my problem? How was I measuring my success? And how was my boss measuring my success? Because clearly we had different expectations. Was I lying to myself about what hard work means? If there was a disconnect between my boss's opinion and my opinion, how had it continued so long? How could it be that persistent? When I started thinking through those questions, I realized that there were a number of things that led to the problem and that I was indeed the person most responsible. Darn it. Here's what I did wrong, and I think this is important, and I want to share it with you so that you don't have the same trouble that I had. My problem was I did not ask for enough help. I fundamentally believed that my job was to solve hard problems, that my job was to figure it out, that my job was to understand the problem and then do whatever it took to solve it. For example, at one point I was overseeing a system that delivered software to the reservation centers of the hotel chain. If my system didn't perform, people could not book hotel rooms. And, you know, in the hotel business, booking rooms is pretty important. Unfortunately, the company had not staffed my team with enough team members to do the amazing work that I knew needed to be done. But I was personally committed to delivery, so I focused my attention on doing whatever it took to get the job done with the team that I had available. And unfortunately, too, the tool we were using was not the most reliable tool set in the world. And what that meant was that sometimes the system would crash during a deployment. Now, our deployments happened when the reservation centers were closed, and our centers were all over the world, and that meant that often these deployments would fall in the middle of the night in my time zone. And I knew that this inability to book rooms was a big deal. So I made it a point to personally monitor the deployments. And when a deployment would fail, I'd leap in to immediately take action and restart the deployment so it would complete successfully in time for the center to reopen. And it worked. As far as the business folks were concerned, the system was great. It delivered exactly what we had said it would deliver. Now, can you see where things were going wrong? Well, let me go a little farther. I had complained to my boss about the fact that the operations team was not skilled enough to solve problems without my help, but I didn't actually ask for additional help. And what ended up happening was that at least once a month, I'd have to pull an all-nighter to make sure the system was working. But I didn't actually tell my boss that. And what's worse, my boss didn't even realize that I needed to work a full-time job on this project, so he had assigned other projects to me too. Now, when I was making my decisions about setting my priorities at work, I would look at this project, and I knew that this was directly linked to corporate revenue. And so I felt that it was much higher priority than the other projects that the boss assigned me to do. And when I needed to make a decision about which one to prioritize, I chose the one that I deemed best for the business. Now, the thing is, we had a lot of projects going on, and there wasn't a great link between the leadership that was in place in that organization and the business. And the priorities that the leadership team had often were not completely aligned with the business. And so my choice to prioritize the business's interests didn't align with my boss's ideas about where the priorities ought to be set. And I never really even had that conversation with my boss. I mean, they hired me to solve hard problems, right? And I was using my judgment to do what was best. So why in the world would I ask for help? Now, I'll tell you, as I got to a deeper level of self-awareness, I had to recognize that I had an issue with pride. Why would I ask for help? Wouldn't I be just admitting that I wasn't good enough to do the job? As I look back now, I realize that I could have avoided a lot of my troubles if I had asked for help. I later learned that when I know about a problem, but nobody else knows about that problem, then I'm the one who has a problem. But if I work with other people to have them walk through the problem with me, then it becomes our problem. As I look back on that season, I realized that my monthly all-nighter heroic effort was needlessly self-sacrificial. The business folks who loved the results of the system, they didn't understand how fragile it was. They thought it just worked. And as a result, they weren't aware that there was even a problem at all. And since there were no problems, there was no need to put any more time, any more money, or any more people into that system. I should have talked to my boss about the challenges I was having. I should have had him step in and offer ideas and suggestions. I should have had other people with me in the trenches to help figure out what was going wrong. But my pride prevented me from doing that and ultimately set me up for failure. Until I could reflect on where those things went off track, I didn't see how I contributed to my troubles. And until I understood that, I couldn't make changes. That is the power of reflection. So it's written to the end of this lesson. It's almost time for your personal action plan. And as we're preparing for that, I want to share with you our closing thoughts. Now, today we covered that reflection is inextricably linked to learning. Learning allows us to make course corrections that are going to lead to our achievement. The fact is, people who commit to regular reflection come up with insights that lead to increased performance and better results. But how do we do that? We do it by starting small, by adding a brief reflection time to our routine. If you can add a brief reflection time to your routine, you can begin to gain the insights you need. Just a couple of minutes at the start of your day or at the end of your day is going to help you learn and grow. Now, once you commit to reflection, what should you do during reflection time? And I think I would start with just some basic questions that will lead you to some insights. Questions like, what was my best moment today? Which moment, if I could, would I do over? And why? What can I do tomorrow so my reflection time is better? I want to read those questions one more time. What was my best moment today? Which moment, if I could, would I like to do over again? Why? And finally, what can I do tomorrow so that my reflection time tomorrow is better than my reflection time today? Okay, so for your action plan, think about the one idea you can apply, change, or teach. Now, if you're with your team as you listen to this, it's time for group discussion. After we get off this call, take a few moments to talk with the team. What did we cover today? What are you already doing? What could you do better? How could you prepare as a team to reflect? Do you have team reflection? Now, for those of you who are interested in learning more or want to spend some time on this topic, what if you had time with a coach to focus on your growth? I've got a coaching program based on John Maxwell's best-selling book, The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. Today, we've only scratched the surface on one of the 15 laws. But there's even more to this one, and there are 14 others we haven't even talked about. What if you chose to invest in yourself to make a specific plan for your growth? The cost is just $199, and in 4 sessions, you're going to see results because you'll be accountable to do the work to grow. And not only that, but you'll have practical ideas that you can immediately put into practice to help you become the person you need to become in order to achieve those results. If you're interested in that, drop me an email, tom@brighthillgroup.com, tom@brighthillgroup.com, and we'll get it set up. Thank you for being here for today's Lead Yourself First lesson, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you next time.